Welcome to another episode of Inside Humanity Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Arlene Ford, the Dean and Chief Academic Officer of the University of Miami Leonard M. Miller School of Medicine. And today we have an absolutely fantastic treat. It is my pleasure to welcome to the studio Dr. Jason Onua. Jason is a graduate of the illustrious class of 2020 from the Miller School of Medicine, where he obtained his MD and MPH degree in 2020. He is currently the chief resident in psychiatry at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, and he is here today to discuss one of his important contributions to the Miller School while he was a medical student. That is when he co-founded Without the White Coat, an organization that is dedicated to humanizing medicine and strengthening the medical community. Jason, welcome, and I look forward to an engaging conversation about this amazing contribution that you made. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit about yourself. How did you end up at the Miller School and also where you are right now as a chief resident in psychiatry?
Thank you so much for the warm welcome. It is good to be back in sunny South Florida. I got a chance to come out of the cold and visit you guys down here. But where did it all get started? That's a great question. My brother and I actually matriculated to medical school here at Miller the same year, started together. We both took kind of different paths.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bradenton, Florida, just an hour south of Tampa. Both of our parents are Nigerian immigrants, and my dad immigrated to Chicago, and my mom immigrated to Florida. And they actually ended up meeting in Chicago, which is funny because that's where I am now. But ultimately came down and started and raised their family there in Florida.
In medicine, the two brothers in medicine, how'd that happen?
That's a great question. So both of our parents are pharmacists. They actually went back and took turns going to pharmacy school when we were younger. So my mom moved to New York, my dad raised us. And then they pretty much flip-flop spots and both ended up working in the medical field and kind of seeing their sacrifices and their work and that ingrained thought about work ethic and rigor is really what ended up leading us into the medical field. It's funny, I remember interviewing for medical school here at Miller and Dr. Gervais said, well, why medicine? What is the reason that you came in? And I was just like, well, my mom told me to go, so I figured you might need to do what she says. But no, it's really been a rewarding experience, especially kind of doing the MD-MPH program and an undergrad studying anthropology. So it really just led me into this field and continued to cultivate that interest in practicing in medicine.
So your two parents in the medical field already, the expectation therefore was that the two of you would pursue some science related
strongly encouraged.
We know about this immigrant family. Yeah. Right, so you can be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer.
Those are the three shining stars. Somehow we made it, they got to it.
Good. Well, I'm sure that they're very proud.
Yes.
Of what the two of you are doing right now. So how is it that both of you chose to come to the Miller School?
You know, we applied the same year. My brother's 2 years older than me, but I've essentially always got the school where he went. I said, I'll follow your footsteps until you made a little error or something like that, but he just kept doing things so well. And when we had the opportunity to come here together, it was really a dream come true. I still remember getting the phone call and the acceptance. And realizing that, hey, we're going to go on this journey together and continue to build and work together moving forward. I think the Miller School of Medicine, specifically being physically located in the great city of Miami, offers unparalleled training program, right? Where you have the opportunity to see public health in action and really work with diverse patient populations and understand what it means to be a physician advocate and give back to the community, which is really something that this program, the MD-MPH program specifically, fostered in me while I was here.
That's great to hear. And tell me a little bit about what it was like to go to medical school with your brother. I mean, medical school can be so stressful, but you had some built-in support mechanism there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, we've always gone to school together. I mean, it's iron sharpens iron, right? You know, I think.
So you mean you guys never get into fights or anything?
Well, once I lost the fight, like at 3-4 years old, I realized it's better to collaborate with this guy than to fight with them.
That's why you're a psychiatrist.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I was meeting other minds trying to figure out what's the best way for us to work together, and I realized it was not butting heads with him. But no, he's really been a major support system of mine, always encouraging, whether it was having a difficult time in a specific class or figuring out what I want to do with my life specialty-wise, right? He's always been someone I've been able to bounce ideas off of. Fortunately, he's working nights right now, I think, in the PICU, so couldn't be here today. But I could definitely speak for both of us and say it's been a pleasure and a rewarding experience to be able to do this together.
And that allows me to segue into really the crux of today's conversation. We know that medical school can be quite stressful.
Yes.
And we know from prior data that 50% of medical students, whether in the U.S. or in Great Britain, end up suffering from depression. Yeah, and then the number is probably even greater than that. It's just that that's the number that have admitted to it. Tell me about coping abilities then while you were in medical school, and what ultimately led you to start thinking about this concept of wizard or white coat.
Yeah. So even building off kind of the framework of the issue, right, when we're talking about healthcare, medical students, and burnout. Before we get the students, before they enter and matriculate into medical school, they're like resilient folks, right? These are folks who actually, compared to the general population, are typically usually doing better in terms of mental health and things of that nature. But there's something about medicine and medical school and the rigors of it and the challenges that come with it that results in these high degrees of burnout that you talked about.
Yeah, we like to think that while you're a pre-medical student, you can still manage, you can still cope, yeah, and so forth. You can pull the all-nighters and so forth. But the sheer rapidity at which we are throwing voluminous amount of information at you as a medical student makes it harder to actually cope. So is that a potential explanation for it, or are there other things that we should be focusing on?
I think that's definitely part of it, but other things definitely contribute to a great degree, right? Whether it's the financial stressors of entering medical school, even attending medical school on scholarship, sometimes the price of cost of living makes it hard.
Yes, especially in Miami now.
Especially in Miami and the major metropolitan areas where you find a lot of the, you know, higher-end academic institutions. And it goes from that to diversity in the workforce. If I'm going to medical school where you're not seeing people that look like you or finding mentorship from people that look like you, I mean, the list goes on, I think, for us to think about how a multifaceted issue this is. And that's what we were thinking about early in our medical school career. It was conversations that we're having with our classmates. And looking around us, we'd see people who are very well accomplished, have interests that span far outside of medicine, people with careers in music and dance and art and social advocacy and all of these things that hold their identity together, that because of the rigors of medical school, you find people losing. And I think that's one of the things that we wanted to chip away at, was how can we deconstruct the archetype of what a physician is supposed to be and make room for some of these identities that have gone underrepresented or cast to the wayside because that doesn't necessarily fit the mold of a physician.
It's a very provocative point. And from the perspective of the administrators, what could we be doing better to support mental health and to make sure that this intrinsic identity is no longer hidden because your life is overtaken by the stressors brought about by physiology and microbiology, yeah, immunology, and all these other pressures we put on?
The hard question. I think the rigors of medicine are going to be there. The rigors of medical education are going to be present. I think even looking at some of the things that Miller has done and thinking about being very intentional about how you're creating curriculum to allow for students to have flexibility and adaptability and continue to live life while they're medical students, because it doesn't pause, right? Family members get sick, people get married, they have fall in love, they have kids. All of these things still happen while you're trying to, you know, go through that fire hose of information that you're studying. So I think that's one thing, is really thinking about curriculum structure, really thinking about how we are financially supporting medical students as they're navigating that process, which I was fortunate enough to be blessed, and my brother was as well, to have scholarships and navigate it. But still, even paying for living is something that was a challenge.
I'm speaking now as the dean.
Yeah.
How do we encourage our students to bring their authentic selves every day so that the people that we brought into the medical school because of their personalities, because of their aspirations and the way they want to change the world can be the same ones that we are training in while addressing some of these other stressors that they have, whether financial, emotional, or just sheer, you know, voluminous amount of information?
Making safe spaces, making stages for people to be more transparent, to talk about the challenges that they've had or the parts of their identity that can oftentimes feel like, I can't share this in that space. I think having community allows for that. And that's really what we're hoping for and have really been doing with Without the White Coat.
I love it. And this is also going to become mandatory listening material for the rest of my staff. So tell us about that. So you came to this realization that you needed to have some safe space to be able to express yourself. And how did that concept of Without the White Coat evolve? So, to that, and let me add that we sense that there is a dehumanization process that occurs during the 4-year continuum in medical school, and especially when you start hitting the wards, the clinical clerkships, and how do we begin to put a stop? Because these are the people who are idealists that we bring into the medical profession to save the world.
Yeah.
I think alleviate human suffering.
I think one of the things that can be really helpful to alleviate human suffering, we have to acknowledge the fact that we're human ourselves.
And that's a deep statement.
Off the top, I think it's the conversation that's helping. I think humanizing medicine is one that is going to be an act of humility, right? I think medicine at its finest, and we think about medicine as a practice. And for me, when I think about practice, I think it's truly an expression of gratitude for how imperfect we actually are. So I think the more that we have administrators, faculty, attendings being open and vulnerable and being able to share the human side of things, right? The error is human. And I think that even allowing us to recognize our errors and where we fall short, I think is really important. And on top of that, whenever you talk to someone in medicine or a medical student, second year, third year, it's what kind of doctor you want to be? What specialty are you interested in? What research are you doing? And I'm just like, well, where are you from? What do you like to do? Well, you know, who are your friends? And I think sometimes bringing that human aspect to conversations and spaces can really help people.
So how does Without the White Coat work? How does it make life better?
Yeah, great question. That's the question that we wanted to answer. And when we were having conversations about it, we realized we didn't have the answers to it. And when I didn't have the answer to figuring out how can I help my community, well, luckily I had an MD, MPH, and I was in a public health program. I said, well, you do a needs assessment. So Without the White Coat is really just a large scale needs assessment. It's asking people to talk about their identity, talk about things that they have found helpful in their life, and just engaging people in that discourse, I think, is what we're still actively doing to figure out Well, from that discourse, what actionable steps can we take as we move forward to build out programming, to build out interventions? But if you don't go to the community and ask them what they need, you're going to end up building something probably that's not going to be as effective and you're not going to get buy-in in. So really, it's just crowdsource features that we do on our social platforms, including Instagram, and we have a website where we ask people, who are you without the white coat? And the answers that we've gotten have been so fascinating. People talk about their families. They talk about being a sibling or being a parent. They talk about their diverse backgrounds, whether it's gender orientation or whether it's, you know, I grew up in a low-income household and that's what this has meant to me, or even being a patient themselves. And just hearing the feedback and how people have really been engaged and willing to share their stories is one of the reasons that's kept us doing it for so long, because we still read through all of them ourselves and really engage with the community.
So for people who've never heard about Without the White Coat, how does it work? How do we get involved with it? How do you benefit from it? Because I think there are a lot of things that I want to tease out after that, but I'm this uninitiated, new medical student. I want to hear about it. I want to get involved with Without the White Coat.
So we make it very low barrier entry for people to engage and participate within the community. If you go to our website, withoutthewhitecoat.com, there is a submission panel where you can submit stories about your identity without the white coat. We've also started to expand content.
So you start with a question. Who are you without the white coat?
Correct.
And I guess fundamentally, just by asking that question, you are forcing people to be introspective and to reconnect with themselves, perhaps the same ideals that brought them to pursue medicine and to want to improve the human condition.
And I think
and so that's what you're challenging them to think through and to write it, to write their own, who am I?
It's your mission statement for yourself, your vision statement for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think when you're able to acknowledge and really hold on to those things, it helps you as an individual, but ultimately helps you as a clinician, because you can step into rooms and be able to connect on a human level with the people that you're caring for. It's not another pathology. It's not another room number. It's this is the person that I'm working with, because you kind of have that intrinsic understanding of yourself.
You know, what an important reminder of your constitutional makeup and the things that matter to you and hopefully should guide you and shape your approach to caring for others. That's fascinating. How did you get that revelation? Is it one night you were just studying and couldn't get it? Let me get some distraction.
I think, again, like I said, I don't think the answers have come from us. I think it's just come from us sitting with people and making space and sharing in that space with people to really listen to them. I'm like, when it gets down to it, you're not talking about I define myself because I'm a psychiatrist or I'm a surgeon or I'm this or I'm that. You've had other identities that you've held on to and that are important to you before you got here. And that's the human aspect of it that we're really trying to promote and hold on to.
And that's that constitutional makeup.
Yeah.
So, but how does this level of engagement with others and in hearing about their stories, how has that helped you and shape your own life in many ways? Because I think that must be very inspiring and beneficial.
Yeah. I think it's one of the reasons that I ended up in psychiatry, honestly, thinking about it. I studied anthropology at Washington University in St. Louis, and there you're really thinking about human society and different concepts, especially within like a medical anthropology space. So it was always about the stories. It was always about the narrative. Without the White Coat builds on that. I think for me as well as my brother, it's allowed us to be introspective about ourselves and find out what drives you. Starting Without the White Coat in medical school and going to class and taking boards and all of those things, I think without having the space to do that introspection, I don't think we would have been successful or kept it going as long as we have.
And how many lives do you believe that you've impacted?
I wish I could put a number on it. I can't. I think what sticks out to me the most is moments where you have people reach out and say, hey, this really helped, or I didn't realize other people had similar experiences as I have. I think those moments continue to ferment how important the work is, and that we want to keep pushing those boundaries.
So in a way, directly or indirectly, you are helping with people's mental health struggles because it's a process of self-discovery.
Yeah, we hope so. I think, again, we enter with that humility that we're going to continue to work within the space of the community and just be present to listen.
And how do people find out about Without Going
Crazy? Yeah. At the very beginning, it was and it continues to be a very grassroots effort. And I think we've been really committed to that, where a lot of it's word of mouth. I think we probably personally recruited the first 100 or so features just based off of our network of people we knew in medicine, forcing our classmates to be like, hey, we really need y'all to do this for us so we could keep building.
I was about to say, second year.
Yeah.
I mean, you were preparing for a test.
Yep.
Step one.
Yep.
And then clerkship, and you managed to have time to deal with that, to continue to cultivate and the human side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think being at Miller, I've been blessed to have mentors and advocates who have kind of guided me through. And I think I said to you earlier, it made the bar pretty high. So I worked a lot with Dr. Hansel Tux, who in his early days of residency was working on the legislature. So I think he was just like, well, you keep going. And so I think having those mentors and thinking about what drove us to do it, I think having that inner why was really helpful to move through that.
Yeah, I mean, and clearly it's interesting that you mentioned it led you, it maybe influenced your decision to go into psychiatry, and you recognize the mental health struggles, and how do you feel you are impacting the community now, especially others with mental health struggles?
Yeah, I think battling stigma is something that I'm really passionate about, especially in mental health, especially in minority communities and Black communities and immigrant communities, thinking about this is something that oftentimes doesn't go talked about, doesn't come up. I mean, you think about where people have come from and the struggle they've come from, that mental health access and treatment isn't even a conversation that was being had in some of those spaces. So as we're raising new generations of healthcare professionals, I think being cognizant of that is really important for us to do this type of work. So breaking down the stigma is something that I think...
And how do we do that? How do we... Well, I think this is an attempt to do it because you're inviting people to be self-reflective in many ways, and then coming back to their roots and the things that made them special. But is that sufficient to really destigmatize things, or to be able to just talk?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think representation is important in terms of making sure that we are demonstrating that it's okay to access these services when you need them. But even before that, thinking about what kind of curricular structures can we do or implement so that people know that these things are available, right? Access is a big piece of it, right? How easily can a medical student access mental health services? And what does that look like? I think being very intentional about how those programs are designed can be really impactful for people. I mean, there are different ways to incorporate or integrate forms of therapy that can be done virtually now, that some studies have demonstrated can decrease levels of burnout or depression or even suicidality in medical students.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was going to touch on, because every year in med schools throughout the United States, and I'm sure also in Europe, you have students committing suicide. And what can we do? I think this is a great start to be able to talk about things, to really get them reconnected to their roots. But somehow we need to be able to provide that. We talked about access being one of the challenges. We talked about the stigma being one of those. But we really do not want to see those occurrences. And it's also true even in undergraduates in schools. So So, you know, from your position, your experience without the white coat and now as a chief resident of psychiatry, where do we go from here? How do we begin to make a dent in this crisis?
I think acknowledging the urgency. I think sometimes we can have a tendency to say, well, people have to be trained. We have to do things as they were. We're still putting out doctors and things of that nature. And this type of issue, you can kind of look away from at times. I think with the pandemic and the additional stress that was put on medical students and providers and trainees, you kind of saw the light turn a little bit more towards it. So as things may be stabilized, we want to make sure that we're still addressing it and pursuing it with a level of urgency that we could see, I think, from medical school standpoints. What are we investing in, right? What are we investing in financially? What are we investing in our time? The fact that you're spending this time to use the space of the podcast to say, we're going to talk about this. We're going to have a discourse that we're going to disseminate to people so that it's on our minds and that we're implementing faculty or support systems that can really implement and think about the changes that need to happen from an academic and public standpoint.
So some more comprehensive. Do you find that there are some disparities in terms of mental health issues in ethnic minorities, racial ethnic minorities? And if so, is it a problem of access, a stigma?
The Pandora's box. I mean, there's no doubt that there is a large issue in terms of equity. Where does that come from? It comes from our education system. It comes from our financial system. It comes from mass incarceration. It comes from how our policing. It comes from so many different areas that when you look at it, you're like, well, that's not a problem that's tangible or that you could fix. But the way I look at it is we continue to practice. We continue to put the effort forth and we will continue to make progress even though it's an imperfect situation. But yeah, ultimately there is a lot of disparity, a lot of lack of equity in mental health care. And hopefully that's something that we can kind of work forward and look inward as a community and say, well, how can we work on that from a healthcare provider standpoint or medical student standpoint, as well as the greater patient population.
And what do you see your responsibility in addressing those issues?
Yeah. I think, having the background in public health and having the privilege to be a physician, a clinician, you sit at bedside with someone, as a psychiatrist or really any specialty, and you hear how vulnerable that they can be. You hear about the suffering, how people have endured things that push beyond what we thought the human limits were. And when you sit there and you offer treatment plans and you make recommendations, like I said, it's a practice of humility. And you realize that what you could do at the bedside is impacted by the world that the patient lives in. So really, I think to be a full physician, you need to be a physician advocate. So that's what I'm hoping to do. I do think kind of with the training, there is a responsibility that we all share.
So this wonderful. Any closing words of advice for, especially for our students and residents and even young attendees?
Yeah, the last thing I would say is be there for yourself. Because it's going to be important for you to be there for others, and it's always okay to reach out for support or go seek, professional treatment.
That's fantastic. Well, Jason, it's just been an enlightening discussion, and I really appreciate your candid discussion of a very tough topic, but clearly you've mastered it, and I'm very impressed with the contributions that Without the White Coat have been able to make to improve people's ability to cope, because I think this is a pathway to reconnect with oneself. So thank you very much to you and your brother and for continuing to carry the torch going forward.
Thank you so much for having us.
Looking forward to more contributions from you and to welcoming you back after you've solved that whole problem. How's that?
I like it. We can figure it out together.
Fantastic. Well, This has been a very delightful Inside Humanity Medicine podcast with the amazing Jason Onwa, talking about without the white coat and its contributions to improving mental health in our students, residents, and beyond. So please join us again for the next episode of Inside Humanity Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Henry Ford, the Dean and Chief Academic Officer of the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine.